ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name is Matt Brown. Welcome to the Country Hour, broadcasting today from Katherine. This afternoon you'll hear from a Brahman breeder in this region who must be doing a good job, because it seems every time she enters her cattle into a competition, she walks away with a blue ribbon.
It's sort of been a passion of mine for a little while now. I didn't grow up in cattle. I was grew up with horses, but started working for CDU, and I always had the passion for having breeding good cattle, so decided to start my own stud.
Also today you'll hear from a Katherine mango grower who is concerned about the federal government's plans for immigration and potential cuts to backpacker numbers.
It's upsetting to think that, you know, we could well be punished because there are some employers who aren't doing the right thing by their workers. So why punish all of us?
All these stories and plenty more coming up this afternoon on the Country Hour. We're in Katherine, and g'day to everyone tuning in locally on 106.1 FM. First up this afternoon, I want to take you just up the Stuart Highway to the Katherine Cotton Gin, because this week is a very big week for the gin. Processing of the 2026 crop is getting underway. I was out at the gin this morning.
G'day Matt, Tony Geitz is my name. I'm the CEO of Northern Cotton. I also sit on the board of Cotton Australia and another family farming board for Brigand. So welcome to the site. It's great to have you here. And it's a big day today.
It's a big day. It's an important week for the Katherine Cotton Gin. Tell us what's happening here.
Yeah, so basically, I guess the start of this week, mate, we really started the commissioning process with the gin. And as you can imagine, there's lots of moving parts within the gin complex itself, and we've had a few little teething problems, electrical problems, and that's a thing. But yeah, we're hoping to get our first bale out later this morning.
Because how long has it been since the gin pushed out a bale?
I'm just trying to think now. I think we finished ginning in October last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's some time, and I guess the off season's really a process of, you know, doing all of your maintenance and ensuring things are running correctly. But it just seems to be with gins, no matter how well prepared you are, you're there's always a, you know, a few teething issues.
And day one that yesterday throws up some surprises.
Yes.
So can you remind our audience again about the process? Big cotton modules come in on the trucks, and then tell us about the process they go through to become cotton bales.
Yeah, sure. So in module form, we call it seed cotton because the seed is actually still within the cotton bowl. So the ginning process is really a process that separates the seed from the lint and removes the trash from the seed cotton as well. So it's really a three-stage process. There's a lot of cleaning that goes on within the ginning process to ensure that lint quality is as high as it possibly can be, and we're preserving our reputation of a very, very high quality producer in Australia. It's a big part of our global reputation. So we take the process of ginning very seriously. We really want to have that cotton as clean as we possibly can, remove as much trash as we can, and have a beautifully well-presented bale that's ready for export. And then beyond there, once the seed's actually processed, so that's separated and put into our seed shed, which has an aeration system in it as well to manage our humidity within seed. And what we do is we then sell that seed and supply it to what is an increasing number of seed customers in the Northern Territory, which is great.
So the modules that we see here today, where are they coming from, roughly, in the Territory?
Yeah, so at the moment we've got Tipperary seed cotton in the yard. We've got Black Bull And we've also got Tawu Station, which surrounds the gin. So they're the three sort of main producers, I guess, in the NT this year. We've got some coming from the Department of Ag at Douglas Daly.
Oh, rightio.
As well.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And will you potentially get cotton out of Western Australia this year?
Look, there's a strong possibility, Matt. You know, I guess we're, you know, we're the business is a believer in competition. So we would like to think that we try to attract, you know, some cotton from Kununurra, and that's all around our service proposition and our ability to sort of, you know, look after growers, get them paid quickly and those sorts of things.
Yeah, okay. So we've spoken to growers and they've told us that it's been a massive wet season and perhaps yields aren't what they would love them to be. Has the gin this year got enough cotton?
Look, the ginning business is a volume business, right? So,
yep.
So volume, more volume is always better. But look, you know, it'd be fair to say that, you know, we always want more cotton. I mean, regardless of what amount you do get,
yep.
You'd certainly like to have more. But it's been a challenging season. I mean, it really has. I mean, 2 metres of rain in the wet season, 2 metres of in-crop rainfall is quite an extraordinary amount of rain. And I guess rainfall is one thing, but what cotton really does not like is overcast conditions and humid conditions after that rainfall event. And it stresses the crop and it drops fruit. And, you know, that was the main impact on yield this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was farms getting bogged planting and getting bogged harvesting. That's how wet it is out there.
Yeah, no, look, it was quite extraordinary. It really was to see that amount of rainfall. And to be honest, I mean, it's, you know, the crop in terms of its recovery after it stopped raining, so in April was, you know, was pretty good given those very, very difficult conditions in March.
So roughly how many bales are you expecting to do in the 2026 season?
As many as we can, Matt.
Yeah, I get that.
Look, I probably look. It's one of those things we probably don't like to talk about publicly too much.
Okay.
All I can say is more is better.
Yeah. Understood. Yeah. Understood.
Yep.
Am I allowed to ask then? Maybe what sort of bales would you? I know you want to do as much as possible, but surely there is a number that you feel like if we do that kind of number every year, then this gin will be going really well.
Yeah, look, it's a question of a number of factors, right? I'm not trying to just avoid the
okay.
the question, but obviously your gross margin, you know, that we're achieving here, say in the Northern Territory, is very, very different to the East, because we've got a brand new gin and it was very expensive to build. And it's all about, you know, your financing as well, and managing your costs as efficiently as you can. But look, I mean, if as a business, I mean, we would be hopeful that we get to sort of maximum capacity within the next sort of 5 years. And that's probably,
yep,
you know, about 120,000 bales based on the existing infrastructure. We've got an ability to double that capacity. We can put in another gin stand, another feeder bay, and another press. So yeah, I mean, the optimum number for us is probably that, you know, that 120,000 bales.
Yeah. So for you, what's the key to maybe getting more properties growing cotton?
Well, look, it's again, it's a number of factors. Price is a very important one. And we're seeing some fantastic prices at the moment. So, you know, 2027 crop in the eastern states, they're looking at over $650 a bale. So that really helps with gross margins. And I think the more important factor is we're still learning to grow the crop in the Northern Territory. And you know, things like soil health, acidity levels, pH levels, crop rotation, all of those factors are really going to be important in terms of actually building a sustainable industry.
Yeah.
So you can't just grow back-to-back cotton and not have some sort of an effect on your soils. So
yeah. Well, it was Tipperary Station the other day that told us what they feel works for their soils is perhaps one in every 3 years.
Correct.
Cotton.
Yep. And that's pretty much a similar rotation of what we have in the east as well. I guess in the east they have forced rotations through drought and those sorts of things. Mm. But rotation, you know, crops like sorghum and corn and, you know, going to become very, very important, you know, to a sustainable production system in the Northern Territory.
Which is the perfect segue into our next part of the conversation. If you're tuning in, this is the Country Hour, and I'm speaking to Tony Geitz from Northern Cotton. I'm at the Catherine Cotton Gin today, which is, yeah, firing up for season 2026. I think last time you and I spoke, you mentioned that the owners and everyone involved here were having conversations about starting up a grains complex. Where's that story at now?
Yeah, so we're strong believers that the grain industry will play a very important role as part of the scaling up of cotton production. So our grain complex has changed a little bit in terms of what we're doing here. So we're going to move more to a bunker model. We've purchased the necessary equipment. We have a drive over hopper that we've acquired, a grain line machine, which is a very good machine. We have our tarpaulins and we have our sampling equipment. So we're ready to handle grain on the site and become a delivery point for growers. We were hoping to do a little bit of volume this year, but again, because of that very, you know, that extraordinary wet season, yields in primarily the sorghum that was produced was a bit lower than normal. So, but we're optimistic about the future. So, yeah.
Next year, if all went to plan, what sort of grains would you expect to be receiving here?
Look, I think primarily grain and corn. There's potential for, you know, soybeans, chickpeas as well. But we would expect that, you know, the primary crop is probably going to be sorghum with a bit of corn and a few other bits and pieces thrown in there.
Yeah. And from here, where would it go?
So sorghum, it goes to China, so it goes into liquid that they the Baijiu production.
Yeah,
that very strong liquor that they have in China. So it's a very significant market. Yeah, it's a lucrative market. In terms of market access, it's no problem. You know, this site has AQUIS accreditation and has GACC accreditation, which is the importer registration that's required to access China.
And you can send it all out of Darwin port, can you?
Absolutely, all out of Darwin port. Everything transships through the Singapore port at this point. But over time, I think that we'll eventually get sort of dedicated vessels going to sort of China main ports.
And corn. Will all the cotton go out of Darwin Port this year as well?
Yeah, so that, look, in the off season, we've been working extremely hard on our supply chain costs and trying to get those costs as competitive as possible, so that we're not seeing cotton go down to the east to be exported out of, you know, Port of Brisbane.
Which is what has happened in previous
years. It has indeed.
Which, to the average person, they shake their head thinking, how? Yeah. Can that be a more viable option?
Yeah, and look, it's just to be frank, it's the difference in the container freight rates, ocean freight rates, ex Darwin as compared to, you know, ex Brisbane. So we have a very significant percentage of excess containers in the Port of Brisbane. So shipping companies are effectively subsidising the cost of getting that container back to the more lucrative freight rates, China, US, China, sort of Europe. So we have a similar situation in Darwin, and I feel over time that freight rates will become more competitive. But right at the moment, the driving factor was simply costs for those, for that cotton going to the east. This year, however, you know, we've worked very hard with the ocean carriers. We've worked very hard with Horizon to get some very good rates on the train, and I'm very confident this year that we won't have very many bales going back to the east at all. Everything should go out of the Port of Darwin, which is great to see.
That was always the plan.
Yes, Yeah. And look, I think, you know, over time, I mean, the Northern Territory actually has the potential to be the cheapest supply chain in Australia. So if you look at the distance from, say, you know, the Dalby region to the Port of Brisbane, I think we're about 238 kilometres. You know, the Katherine site to Darwin is about 280 kilometres. But we've got a 30% freight efficiency because we can, you know, we can use triples. So... yeah, I'm quite confident that we're going to see very, very good grower returns in terms of their bale price as compared to those eastern areas.
We spoke to the boss of CPC just on Monday's Country Hour, and Troy Setter said that they'd look to do cotton in the Barkly if that bale price had a 7 at the start of it, so over $700 per bale. What would it mean to an operation like this if the Barkley started churning out some cotton?
Oh, look, it would be extremely exciting, transformative in terms of volumes and those sorts of things. And great to see yesterday, I think, again in the country, the announcement about the water licence being granted there to CPC. But, yeah, look, we're very excited about the potential of that region. Wanted to sort of wish CPC the best of luck, and we're very, very keen to be ginning their cotton production in the future.
Well, all the best with the week ahead, the first week of the 2026 season, and thanks for letting the Country Hour swing by. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks for taking the time to come and visit us.
That is Tony Geitz, who's the Chief Executive of Northern Cotton, which has started ginning the 2026 NT cotton crop today. It is 13 to 1, and you are tuned into the Country Hour, broadcasting from Katherine this afternoon. Up next, the federal government says it's reviewing its immigration policy. So why has that got some farmers nervous? I'll tell you next.
You'll find barrow loads of gardening goodness in the September issue of Gardening Australia. Explore the best plants for long-lasting blooms, visit a native garden and tour a tropical backyard. There's expert help for your roses and indoor plants, advice on replenishing your soil, plus tips on growing passion fruit, water chestnut and spring veg. Gardening Australia, from newsagents and abcmagazines.com.au.
Right across the territory on the ABC, you are tuned into the Country Hour. The federal government says it's slowing down its processing of new working holiday visa applications as it works through changes to Australia's migration system. Now, these visas allow backpackers to extend their stay in Australia by working in regional or remote areas, giving the ag sector over the decades a really important stream of workers. But Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke says Labor's immigration policy is under cabinet review, and in the meantime, visa applications are being slowed down.
At the moment, the processing of working holiday visas at the moment, they are still being processed, but they are being processed more slowly than they were previously.
What sort of an effect is that going to have on the agricultural industry?
The principal visa for the agricultural industry is actually PALM, the Pacific Workers Scheme. One of the things that happened when we started to improve the worker protections on PALM was, not overwhelmingly, but some of the worst operators said, well, if we've got to have better standards for PALM workers, we'll just switch to backpackers. And that's not the way this system's meant to work.
Are we talking weeks or months before you land the migration policy?
We're talking about a cabinet process.
That is the Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke. The National Farmers Federation says changing the backpacker visa system could cause big problems for Aussie ag. NFF spokesperson Richard Shannon says the NFF wants politicians to consult industry before making any big changes.
Concerned and I would say alarmed at the suggestion that numbers would be cut back without any really clear understanding of what that might mean for individual businesses, for regional economies, for the food security of the nation. The cost of fresh produce in supermarket aisles, there's been a recent comprehensive government report into the food supply chain and the workforce needs, which found that horticulture we had about 25% of our seasonal workforce temporary migrants, and of that, about half are backpackers. They're essential to our industry and the food security of the nation.
So when Tony Burke, and you would have heard those comments there, saying, well, the palm scheme's way more important to agriculture, that's our preferred visa for agriculture, so backpacker visa won't make a huge difference. Like, what do you say to that in terms of the worth of the visa to agriculture?
Both programs are really important. We are not wanting to get into a position where we're reliant on one. Before COVID, about 80% of our workforce were backpackers. Obviously that went through a significant change as then Prime Minister Scott Morrison told backpackers to go home. We then became more reliant on palm. That created its own issues. Industry is sick of the back and forward and the lack of certainty. It's really undermined confidence across the industry. We need a stable, secure, reliable, predictable workforce in our industry, and that's going to be a mix moving forward of palm and backpackers. They are not substitutes. They fill different roles and purposes, both in a very practical sense on farm, but in terms of the sort of labour need they meet, backpackers are far more flexible. Palm workers arguably more productive. We need a mix.
That's Richard Shannon, who's the Executive Officer for Horticulture with the National Farmers Federation, speaking to Warwick Long. Marie Piccone relies on about 300 temporary workers to pick mangoes at Mambaloo's orchards around the Katherine region. She says the decision to put visa applications on a go slow just before this year's mango harvest is unwelcome news.
It's another difficulty for us trying to juggle getting a workforce together for our fairly intense mango season. And I just think that it's upsetting to think that, you know, we could well be punished because there are some employers who aren't doing the right thing by their workers. So why punish all of us?
When you say punish, is it because there is a lack of available backpackers already? Is that what you're experiencing in the territory?
No, we're not experiencing that at the moment, but as it gets more towards summer, there'll be less people around, and we need a base level that we can call on. You know, we're already sort of engaging some of them after having locked in our palm scheme workers. So we just don't want numbers to dwindle, and we don't want to be competing with a whole lot of other primary producers because, you know, we all need them. And I think is it really very responsible of the federal government to do this without consultation? And the whole palm scheme takes months and months and months of administration and organising. So it's not like a last minute thing that we can do. And we need to have our workforce to get our mango crop off, because that's the one time of the year where we get our income.
Tony Burke said that the palm scheme is the primary or principal visa scheme to supply temporary workers to the agricultural industry. He said that some of the sort of bad operators in agriculture have decided to move away from it because it has requirements in terms of providing certain conditions. Is that a factor in your decision-making when you're employing temporary staff?
It's not really a factor in our decision-making. We've been working with the palm scheme since 2008. It's about 10 times the administration and a significantly more costly scheme than just employing Australians under the same rates and conditions or employing backpackers. I think that the ministers and the federal government have to understand that horticulture is in a cost-price squeeze. And we will use backpackers for top up, let's call it. We're not exactly sure of the exact numbers, so we're bringing in a base level of palm scheme workers. And I just think that maybe if some of these people in Canberra were making the decisions and trying to make sure that they had adequate labour, they might not be quite so flamboyant with the statements they're making.
What do you think needs to be done as both sides of politics start to examine the immigration settings in Australia?
Well, I think that it's pretty widespread. We're all feeling the fact that we don't have enough people in Australia for all the jobs. We're often short of key staff. And the palm scheme helps with that, but so do backpackers. And so does the immigration of, you know, so does people immigrating to Australia with various skill sets. I mean, we're constantly looking for new team members, and often it's very, very hard to get them because there's worker shortages and skill shortages. And the Palm Scheme provides for some of that, but not all of it.
That is Marie Piccone from Mambaloo Mangoes. That company has got orchards around the Katherine region, also over in Queensland. They need lots of pickers, and Marie just a little concerned about the current goings-on of the federal government. She was speaking there to Sam Parry. Right across the territory on the ABC, this is the Country Hour. We are broadcasting from our studio in Katherine. Our text number, as always, is 0487 991057. I got one message here that says, is your Katherine ABC studio still at the local visitor centre? Yes, it is. And it's been this way, I think, since 2002. So, yeah, the ABC sort of tucked away in the corner. It's a lovely little studio. And I can tell you that the visitor centre today is super busy. Heaps of people coming in wanting to know more about the region and getting some tips on what to see and do. So lots of people here today at the visitor centre, which is great news for Katherine.
G'day, this is Rowan Fisher from Charles Darwin University and North Australia Fire Information, NAFI. I'm sure most of you use it. It's the website that provides all the information for fire management across 80% of Australia. And you're listening to The Country Hour.
The Country Hour is today in Katherine. G'day to everyone tuning in locally on 106.1. After today, I'll be heading west towards Kidman Springs Station in the VRD. Kidman Springs is hosting a big field day over 2 days this week. They're expecting more than 100 people there. I can't wait. It'll be good fun. It's always good fun out at Kidman Springs. And if all goes to plan, the Country Hour will be broadcasting live from the research station this Thursday. And that's as far west as I'll go. I've just received a text from Andy, who perhaps thinks I'm getting ready to cross the border once again. Not this time, Andy, not this time. But Andy says, Matt, I've just come back from the Kimberley. And whilst in Kununurra, I came across this place selling amazing sausages. Andy says, the truth is, sausages aren't normally in my diet. However, I'm a convert. The Italian style was exquisite. And after eating them at our camp out on the Pentecost River, I was absolutely hooked. Came back into Kununurra, bought the chicken feta sausages, the spinach sausages, and the cheese. It was all good, reports Andy. Anyway, the long and short of it, Matt, next time you're in Kununurra, treat yourself. You won't be disappointed. Andy, I reckon I know exactly which shop you are talking about. Because it's the ABC, I won't say it out loud, but wink, wink, nudge, nudge, I know what you're on about. And, gee, I wish I was with you around a campfire at the Pentecost River. That's about as good as it gets, I reckon. About as good as it gets.
Andrew Dalgleish, Foxalicious Fruit, just out of Katherine. When I get a spare moment on the tractor, I like listening to Matt and the team on the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. The Country Hour today is broadcasting from Katherine, and in a moment you'll hear from a Brahman breeder in this region who must be doing a fantastic job, because it seems every time she enters cattle into a competition of late, she's walking away with a blue ribbon.
It's sort of been a passion of mine for a little while now. I didn't grow up in cattle. I was, grew up with horses, but started working for CDU, and I always had the passion for having breeding good cattle, so decided to start my own stud.
That story coming up in a moment, and we're also hearing from you this afternoon via our text number, which is 0487 991057. Just before the 1 o'clock news, I shared with you some stories about the federal government saying that it's slowing down its processing of new working holiday visa applications, and that the government in general is currently reviewing its immigration policy. And this has got some farmers concerned. They're worried about what this could do to backpacker numbers. And we know how the farming sector needs everyone it can get when it comes to harvest time. On the text line this afternoon, got a text from Charlie in Katherine who says, Matt, we had some Southerners at the Katherine show this year carrying on about sending back all of the immigrants. And I told them that we are now 18 months understaffed and need everyone that we can get, says Charlie and Catherine. Another text here from Alan who says, Matt, the mangoes are about to be picked and the feds are buggering around with imported labour. Where is Luke Gosling? He's meant to represent us Territorians, says Alan. And Graham in Darwin says, Matt, another good country hour, but the whinging and the whining from the rural industry is pathetic when there are thousands of unemployed locals living in appalling conditions. So Graham reckons the farming sector needs to employ more locals. And a text here from Paul and Humpty Doo, who says the bureaucrats and government are going on a go slow. They'd want to watch out. They might start growing roots, says Paul and Humpty Doo. 0487991057 is our text number this afternoon. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Sally Cutter's there this afternoon. How are you, Sally?
I'm not too bad, thanks.
I'm in Katherine today. What's the forecast for this beautiful region over the next sort of 24, 48 hours?
Oh, probably actually more of the same. We got pretty steady conditions in the north. Might see a little bit of afternoon cloud around. As far as those temperatures go for Katherine, we're looking at a top of 34. Sunday didn't get the memo because it's going to be 33, but otherwise it's going to be 34. Minimum's 15 tonight, dropping down to 13 for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 14 for Thursday, 14 for Monday morning. So very, very steady and really sunny conditions. Not really expecting any rain at all. So it depends on what you want. If you want rain, you're out of luck. But if you don't want that rain, you don't have clear skies.
Oh, no, I think at this time of year, everyone's pretty happy with the blue skies. We've got lots of people on the road this week to go to Kalkarindji and the Freedom Festival. There's about 100-odd people heading out to Kidman Springs Cattle Station for a two-day field day. In terms of overnight temperatures for those in the swags, what's the forecast for the VRD?
Okay, so let me just go back to the Gregory district. I think now in the Gregory district.
Yep.
The Gadagaragu, we're looking at 15, 16s, maximums 35, except for next Sunday, which is 34. So mostly sunny, might be a little bit of cloud around, but generally fairly warm during the day, but overnight cool, so you definitely need your swag, but it's not going to be those really, really freezing nights.
Yeah, yeah. You don't need to load up on the blankets at the moment, I don't think.
No.
And further south, Sally, is there a little bit of rain kicking around Central Australia as we go to air?
Yep, there certainly is. We've had 0.5 of a millimetre recorded at the Hume River Gauge, and we've just seen, this morning there's a little bit, but it's basically built as we've gone through the day. We haven't lost that cloud band properly. I think probably the safest thing to say is for the next week, at least, we're going to see rain somewhere in the southern districts in the Lester Simpson area. So, yeah, it might warm up, cool down on Friday as the change comes through, but we're just not losing that middle level cloud, and we're just going to see a continuation of these showers and troughs are coming through as well, which are helping to kick things up. The models last night were talking about it's going to be sort of Sunday and Monday. There's a little bit of variation in the timing, but generally we're going to just see that rain throughout on and off across the southern districts.
Wow. And how many millimetres potentially could get tied up in all of this?
Most of them have got similar to what we saw in the last rain event. So maybe sort of could potentially do 10 to 20 millimetres, but there could be sort of lighter falls. But being showers, of course, you're going to be not necessarily getting it all in the gauge. But, yeah, it's reasonable rain, but whether you get that in the same spot each time is also the question.
Okay, but still, yeah, that's quite something. And system that's delivering moisture into Central Australia, is that continuing to bring rain into some of the cropping areas of the southern states?
Most of it's flying down into through New South Wales and into Victoria. I think South Australia's getting a little bit. Then as the troughs come through, some of it's being driven by the mid-level troughs, which are a bit like surface troughs, but higher up, sort of 10,000 feet up in the air. But when the surface ones come through, we are seeing something a little bit coming through those southern regions, but it's just dragging that tropical moisture, some of that tropical moisture down into southeastern Australia.
Okay. Anything else that you think we should be aware of today, Sally?
Probably the thing to watch out for is fire dangers over the Darwin-Adelaide River area. We are getting a little bit of an easterly surge and just enough dry air that we're sending those fire dangers to quite high. We haven't finalised the calculations yet for today, so I will check the forecast when it comes out and just listen to any advice given by Bushfires NT, because it is going to be that little bit windy, dry, with those really some significant fire dangers in the Darwin-Adelaide River area.
Okay, thanks so much for your time, Sally. Appreciate it.
That's okay.
That's Sally Cutter there at the Weather Bureau. It's 12 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour.
Yeah, g'day. It's Jed Fawcett from Adelaide River. During the dry season, I go out and we do a bit of contract buffalo catching, bull catching. When I get a chance, I like to tune into the ABC Country Hour.
And we're broadcasting from Catherine today. As always, if you need to duck out into the paddock for whatever reason, you can always download the podcast and listen at a time that suits you best. You just search NT Country Hour wherever you get your favourite podcasts from. For the last 3 years, Jessica De Pasquale has been establishing her own Brahman stud just outside of Catherine. This year, Jess's cattle took out blue ribbons at the Catherine and Royal Darwin Show. She caught up with Sam Parry to talk about her herd and why she loves Brahmins.
It's sort of been a passion of mine for a little while now. I didn't grow up in cattle. I grew up with horses, but was always showing horses. And then I started working for CDU many years ago, and I had the opportunity to take over running the farm and the cattle there, so that sort of instilled a lot of passion in bringing that herd up from where it was up to the level that it is now. When I left there, I probably missed the cattle, and I always had the passion for breeding good cattle, so decided to start my own stud.
And you're breeding grey Brahmins. Is there anything you're aiming for in the genetics that you're trying to achieve?
I'm just looking for genetics that are fertile, that are also going to give me a good functional cow and bull. It's going to look good, it's functional, can do its job, and give me plenty of calves.
What does it mean when we say functional Brahman?
So we need an animal to be able to walk out long distances to feed and for water. So they need to be able to, they need to have good legs and good feet, good shoulder structures, good hind end, so that they can actually walk out fluidly and get to where they need to be without any issues, basically.
I've heard it can be a bit of a complicated process building up the genetics and monitoring, you know, the lineage of all of the animals. What's involved broadly to get a stud up and running?
Well, you've got to start from somewhere, I suppose, and I started by purchasing 3 stud cows and then have been breeding those. I AI'd 2 originally, and now I've just been borrowing a bull, and then this year I've actually got my own homebred bull that I've put in with the cows. I've also got a handful of commercial cows which I have been putting a stud bull over, and I'm able to build the herd slowly through their progeny. So basically their calves become Appendix B, and then their calves would be an Appendix C, and then their calves would be what we call a purebred.
Yeah, right. So it's a pretty sort of technical process. Once you get to the end of it, what's the goal? Are you going to sell bulls?
Yeah, so the plan is to sell bulls. Not having a huge amount of success with bulls at the moment. I've only really got the one stud bull that I've bred so far, but it's good in a way. I've been getting lots of heifers, so that's helping me to build the herd a bit quicker. But yes, the plan in the long run will be to sell bulls that are bred up here and that are used to the climate and all that.
How long does it take to go through that whole process?
I think it's probably going to take me a little while. I first started in 2023, and yeah, so I've only really been going for 3 years, but I would say it'd probably a good 10 years to get a decent number of breeders together and to be able to start selling a solid number of bulls.
You obviously had a bit of experience working at CDU, but is there anything since going out on your own that you've started to learn?
Oh, I'm learning all the time. It's amazing some of the things that you didn't realise you didn't know. I continue to do courses, and we get judges up from down south all the time, and we always get them to do like a little judging and paraders school for the kids, but we always sit in and have a good listen too, because there's always something that can be learnt from those fellas that have been doing it for years and years. So yeah, definitely always learning.
Does the kind of customer demand from, say, Indonesia here in the top end, does that change what you're aiming for with genetics?
Well, potentially. I mean, we need something that is going to get to weight faster, so you can get them off faster and younger, because yeah, you don't want to be holding animals for 3 or 4 years to get them to weight. So yeah, if we can get an earlier maturing animal, that would be an ultimate goal. I do have to start thinking about getting another bull in for the breeding season, so that's something that I will be looking at, and potentially AI a couple of cows. So I actually need to preg test the cows down the back still, so there's a couple of little jobs that need to be done, and it'll just be keeping lick up to them and making sure they're ready to go into the breeding season.
Where do you see this stud being in 5 years' time?
Well, I'm hoping that we've got a few better facilities and have built the herd up. We only have 500 acres here, so we can't really run that many animals, but with better facilities we can manage the land a lot better, and hopefully can sort of push the boundaries a little bit more with numbers. But yeah, certainly have the herd built up and be starting to sell a few bulls. Yeah, and still showing, and I'd really like to be able to start helping the younger generation out a lot more, and yeah, that would be another reason for getting better facilities to be able to facilitate students, or whether it be kids from the high school or younger kids even from primary schools, or people that don't get a chance to do this sort of stuff very often.
That is Jessica Di Pasquale, who is the owner of Highview Grey Brahman Stud near Catherine, speaking to Sam Parry. The text number here at the Country Hour is 0487991057. Got a message here, and it's a weather message. It says it rained a lot at 2:30 this morning out here at Mandorah Wagite Beach. Just looking at the Bureau's website, it's got Charles Point with 0.6 of a millimetre. Rained a lot. What does that mean? What did your rain gauge say? Are we talking 5, 10 millimetres more? A few sprinkles out there on the coastline, according to a text this afternoon, 0487991057. The Country Hour is in Catherine today. I passed quite a few road trains on the drive down this morning, so plenty of cattle on the move. Up next, we'll get an update on how the live export trade is faring out of Darwin. The text number here at the Country Hour, 0487991057. Had someone reporting a lot of rain at 2:30 this morning out at Mandorah Wagite Beach. Just around the corner at Bino Harbour, Sprinkles is reporting that he didn't get a drop of rain. He says, Matt, all I had was a bushfire to keep an eye on, but so far, so good. Report Sprinkles.
G'day folks, I'm Darcy Skerr, I'm the farm supervisor at Pinata Farms Catherine here in Matarenka. I'm a third generation farmer for a family owned business and company, so yeah, I'm probably one of the guys out there, and yeah, you listen to the Country Hour.
Now, just before we head to the Roma sale yards, let's get an update on the live export trade out of Darwin. Patrick Moran is the chief executive of the NT Livestock Exporters Association. He says there's been plenty of cattle ships loaded up in the month of August. and prices remained high, which is great for NT cattle producers, but a bit tough on exporters and Indonesian importers.
It's been quite busy. We had 3 or 4 boats over the weekend, and the trade is moving along, although there are significant headwinds with the price of cattle still being quite a bit higher than we would probably like this time of year. But there are some indications from Queensland and down south that more cattle coming on the market and hopefully easing prices a little bit.
Can you just explain why it would ever be a bad thing to have high prices?
It's the price sensitivity of importers in Indonesia. So there's a couple of things going on there behind the scenes. One is that the IDR, the Indonesian rupee, has come down about 10% so far this year, including losses in the currency from the last few years. So purchasing power in Indonesia is fairly low right now. There's also government regulations on how much feedlots can sell cattle for. So there's a couple of factors there that have just softened the import market.
And just on the movement of cattle around the southern states, how is that impacting what's happening here in the territory?
Yeah, so the sort of the lack of supply is the issue, which has driven prices for export cattle up. A lot of the cattle in Queensland is going down south because there's huge demand for box beef from America and various other markets. So that has sort of taken some of the supply that would generally go towards export and moved it down south instead.
You must have a pretty good sense of the number of territory cattle stations keen to offload cattle at the moment. What's your assessment of the kind of scale of stock waiting to be exported?
Yeah, a lot of I've heard that the supply is thin right now and that's driving prices up. So I think because there weren't as many cattle available in Queensland, people were exclusively looking to Northern Territory cattle. So increased competition for those cattle will move prices higher.
Earlier in the year, we had some cattle being trucked up to Darwin for export from the Kimberley. Is that something that we're seeing?
Yeah, there's still some cattle coming over from what I've heard from WA. But again, you know, the Queensland supply usually will supplement things up here, which we haven't really seen.
What do you think will change generally about the prices as we head towards the wet season now?
Like I said, there's a huge price sensitivity in Indonesia right now. So the risk is that if the price goes higher, orders will be canceled and that sort of thing. But hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully the price remains stable or comes down a bit and we can have a strong finish to the year. The price sensitivity could be a short-term thing. I know that the government in Jakarta is doing everything they can to bolster the IDR, the currency, right now. So that seems to be working a bit. It's actually stabilized and actually come up a little bit in the last few months. So it seems that some of the internal measures they're taking to bolster the currency are starting to have an effect. And that, of course, will help. So I don't expect any real change not with demand. It'll be more dependent on those internal factors.
That is Patrick Moran, the Chief Executive of the NT Livestock Exporters Association, speaking to Sam Parry. I'm told high-grade Brahman feeder steers out of Darwinport to Indonesia at the moment still fetching around that sort of $4.40 a kilo. It's time now on the Country Hour to head to the Roma sale yards of all the latest prices. Here's David Friend.
With the continuing dry conditions, Roma agents also had a reduction in numbers to 5,813 head. All the regular buyers attending, the quality of the yardie was very mixed across all classes. At the time of this interim report, the market was softer. However, prices were quality related. Yearling steer 200 to 280 kilos sold from 410 to 568 cents a kilo to backgrounders. Yearling steer 280 to 330 kilos made to 544 to average 505 to backgrounders. Yearling steer 330 to 400 sold to a dealer trend to make to 544 to restockers and 536 cents a kilo to lot feeders. Yearling steers 400 to 40 kilos also improved to make to 530 to lot feeders. Growing steers 500 to 600 kilos improved in rates to make to 440 to processors. Bullocks over 600 kilos selling from 412 to 458 cents a kilo to processors, and bulls over 600 kilos making to 408. also the processors. You've been David Friend for National Livestock Reporting Service at Roma.
Thank you for that, David. On the text line this afternoon, Rob is reporting a very light sprinkle of rain at the Palmerston Lights this morning at about 5:30. So clearly just a little bit of moisture sneaking around the top end. We are getting towards the back end of August, a little bit of humidity starting to creep in. It is that time of the year. We've been broadcasting from Catherine today. I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you missed the start of it, well, then you missed us heading just up the highway to the Catherine Cotton Gin. A big week for the gin because processing of the 2026 crop is getting underway. So we caught up with the chief executive at Northern Cotton, Tony Geitz. He ran us through it all, told us about how things are shaping up, gave us an update on how that site's getting ready to start handling grain as well. So anyway, if you missed that conversation with Tony Geitz, that'll be up on our podcast a little bit later on this afternoon. I'm heading towards the VRD, off to the Kidman Springs Field Day. If all goes to plan, I'll be broadcasting from Kidman Springs on Thursday. Yeah, I'll have a crack on Thursday. So enjoy the rest of your afternoon today and keep it rural.